Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Well, good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business, where we celebrate the entrepreneurial spirit. And whether you own a business, whether you manage a business, or whether you just work as an integral part of one, we're going to seek to provide entertaining and useful information for you and try to do it in a way that we can have a little bit of fun and not be quite so dull. Hey, did you know about this? Back in 1977, a young mom named Debbie Fields began making cookies at home, and she decided she would open a cookie business. Everyone told her she was crazy, that no business could survive just selling cookies. But Ms. Fields' cookies became a worldwide brand and a very successful franchise for many years. It's the whole idea of taking something you're passionate about and good at and turning it into a business. I just got back from a trip to Florida. Walking on the beach down there, I kept noticing a bunch of guys learning how to surf. And there was a van there with the logo on the side, Surf School, down there. Early one morning, I got down there, and no one was there, so I talked to the guy in the van. He was, again, a guy that really loved surfing and decided to make a business out of it and had done quite well. I have another friend up in Lilburn, where I live, that's a great guitar player. And so what he began to do was turn his home into a studio and teach guitar and started a business there. It's this entire idea, again, of taking a hobby or something you're passionate about and turning it into a business. Our guest today has done exactly that. It's my good friend, Wyman Barnett. Hi, Wyman. Good to have you on Driven to Business.
Hey, good to be here.
Wyman, you have a racing background, and how in the world did you get affiliated with that in the beginning anyway?
My older brother, we lived in a small town down below Atlanta, Thomaston, Georgia, and when my brother moved to Atlanta, he met a gentleman up here in the business that he was in at one of the Buick dealers that wanted to build a drag race car. So they built a modest car, and they went to race. So Warren asked me one day about coming over and looking at them racing. So I went over and looked at it, and immediately I knew this is what I wanted to do. And so within just about 3 or 4 months, Warren called and said that he wanted to also do that. So we took a 40 Willis and turned it into a race car and was quite successful with it. And I done the driving, and Warren was in charge of maintenance and the decisions in the car itself. And so that's really the way we got started at it.
Were you actually, was your business actually racing? Is that what you were doing at that time? You were actually?
No, at that particular time, I worked for one of the sub-bottlers for Coca-Cola. And my brother Warren, he worked for one of the Atlanta Buick dealers. So we knew the racing as it could be. We was strictly amateurs and knew nothing about what we was doing. The only thing we knew is that was something we wanted to do. And as stupid as we were, we thought we could be good at it.
You know, Wyman, you've been very successful. I should go on and tell everyone this. A lot of people, as you well know, a lot of people try to transition a hobby into a business. And as we both know, not everyone is successful at doing it. Now, eventually you did. What was the hardest thing you faced in the beginning of doing that?
Not having no money, for one thing. But the other thing was, all of a sudden, everything that we had learned and kept to ourselves about our race cars was no longer ours. What we knew that was made our car successful, we had to put into the customer's car.
No, you began your business. The opening business was actually building race cars. Is that correct? Is that what you guys did?
We started. We opened up. My older brother in '72 opened up a 2-car garage with the intentions that we would go into the race business. But we knew that we didn't have any race business at the time, so we would work on anything that came through the door. And but we was lucky enough and privileged enough that that business didn't last but just a few months, and we was able to get the race car business started. But the hardest thing that I had to do as an individual was to realize that all of a sudden the race team or the knowledge of the race was not about me and my car, but it was about the customer's car. The most important thing we had to do was make sure that our customers' cars cars and engines run good, even if I was didn't. I remember being at a race one day, and we was the number one qualifier getting ready to race, and my brother come over and said, pull the engine out of the car. And I said, we're fixing the race. He said, no, I've just sold it to one of our customers. You won't be racing tonight. And that's the way our business really got started.
That's amazing. Did you fight with him, or did you go ahead and do it?
It was money involved, and we needed money at the time, so we got the engine out of the car and pushed it up in the trailer to come home.
Hey, when you got started in business, and as you and I have talked in the past, you kind of learned it on the fly, but did you pattern yourself? Did you have anyone that you patterned yourself after at all?
When I was with Coca-Cola, I met with a lot of small owners of business.
Right.
And I listened to them and what they said and the things. And I learned that no matter what your business is, there are certain business practices that you have to meet. You have to pay your bills. You have to pay your employees. You got to take care of business. But other than that, we had to look in a new way. I don't know if you know it or not. Drag racing business is a very niche business.
Oh, I can imagine.
There's not a lot of people in the drag racing. And since we dealt mostly with Chrysler cars, it definitely got to be a niche business. So what we had to do was, as we go along, we had to look at what we needed to do to make the business grow. And a lot of that we had to learn on our own. And sometimes it was hard and sometimes it was easy. But as time went on, we found out that we could do it. Sometimes you have to take a chance, and we took a few chances along the way.
You know, Wyman, I'm in a niche business as well. It's not as niche as the drag race business, I can tell you that, you know, the electronic motor drive business. But again, it's one of these things where very few people know anything about it. So it's a niche as well. And when I got introduced to it by two guys out in Texas, fortunately for me, they sort of took me under their wing and taught me a business I knew nothing about. And, you know, before I went to work for them, I had no idea I would be spending the rest of my life doing that. It just sort of seemed to fit when I got there. I liked it and got passionate about it.
I understand that.
And began to have my own business. And you do learn a lot. I learned a lot from those guys. And, you know, there's two ways to learn about things. You can either make your own mistakes and fall on your face and get back up, and that's a very severe teacher. And a lot of us have learned a lot of things that way. I think what you had said earlier about learning, even as a Coca-Cola, when you were Coca-Cola, learning from other business people, it is a little more forgiving, isn't it, if you can learn from someone else? And
if you can look at somebody else's mistake and not make the same mistake, it really helps. But I'll be honest with you, you're going to make mistakes in business. And you're going to make mistakes that are costly sometimes. But like you said, those things happen. You learn from them and you move on. And you know better next time. You can look at the situation and say, 10 years ago, I was in this situation. I'm not going to do the same thing the day that I done then.
That's exactly right. Hey, Wyman, you know, all of us have our strengths and our weaknesses. Now, most hotshot business gurus will tell you that you should build on your strengths and either outsource or delegate your weaknesses. Have you got any? Do you agree with that?
I agree with that 104%. We know race cars and race car parts. When we went into business, we was good at that. But as the business started off, we realized all of a sudden that we knew very little about accounting business. And my wife was in that business, and she kind of said she'd look after us for a year or two. But as the company grew, I looked around and decided that was the weakest thing in our company. So what we did, we went out and found this certified public accountant. And he was very good, and he told us something that really worked out. He said, you need an office manager full-time to look after what you are doing. We didn't want any trouble with the IRS or anybody else. And so we went out and hired this lady. I'll tell you a story about her. She's only been there just a few weeks. And I had been on a trip and came back and had run out of company cash. So I went in and told her that I wanted needed some company cash to give me some. And she looked at me and she says, where are your receipts? I said, I have no receipts. She said, well, mister, without receipts, you get no money. My brother and I decided right then that we must be working for her and instead of her working for us. But she was doing exactly what we need to do. It brought us around that we started doing business in a business way. And it was the best thing that I think has ever happened to the company was her and this certified accountant that we had that would keep the company out of problems.
You know, Wyman, I know so many successful business people, and the story you're telling right there is the story that you hear repeated over and over and over. It's essential, I think, that you figure out what you don't know how to do and don't screw it up. Go get somebody
that... That's right. I think that things that you cannot do and that needs to be done, you have really no choice. It is costing you money if you go out there and do it yourself and it doesn't work. It's just cheaper to you, not only on your wear and tear on your mind, but it's cheaper for the company to get somebody to do the job that knows what they're doing.
You know, when I got in business, I had two of my friends in Texas that had small businesses, both of whom the IRS came after. And I listened to their story very carefully, and I was paying attention to what they did, pretty much saying in the back of my mind, I'm not doing that. And one of them was you know, you talk about payroll. It's very easy to mess up withholdings and so forth, particularly if you don't have an accounting background. And so one of the first things I did was outsource that because I didn't want any part of it.
I know what you mean. We got audited last year by the Internal Revenue Service. And the company is pretty good size now. There's three or four companies together. And they was auditing all of us together and everything. And it took us several months. But when we sat down with a lady and she says, I want to tell you people one thing. Either y'all are the most honest people or y'all are the best crooks I have ever met in my life.
It's an IRS agent with a sense of humor. That's actually kind of amazing.
It is.
Hey, we're coming up on a break right here. You are listening to Driven to Business. Keep in mind that we are streamed live over biz1190.com, and a podcast of today's program is available on eddiemayfield.com. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. I hope you're having a good time listening to us today. Our special guest is Wyman Barnett from Barnett Performance Products, or a race car business. And he's been in business a long time. And we're talking about not only the racing business, but business in general. And I think you'll enjoy it. Wyman, you know, both of us are pretty active in church. So we take a lot of our hints and our stories end up revolving around church. I was at a Promise Keepers event some years ago, and I happened to be sitting with a friend of mine who's a music professor over at Emory. And we were talking about singing, and I asked him why people sing in church choirs. And I was expecting some very highfalutin answer, but he had a very simple answer. He said, because it's fun to do it, and that's the simple answer of it. I've thought about that a lot. And I think that's also why people stay in a business for a long time, either as an employee or as an owner. Do you agree with that?
Fun. You say fun. You're absolutely right. On the way to work every morning, I go over four or five things that I will accomplish this day no matter what. And when I get to work and I get to working on those things and they come through and we get them to work and all, I don't think there's anything that would be more pleasurable to me than that. Some time ago, I thought about retiring, and I took the few days off. And my family, it was at Christmas, and the family came by and stayed and all, and it was great. But, you know, the next week, everybody went back to work but me. And so by 10 o'clock, I was back at work because I miss being down there, being around those people, trying to solve those problems, being with my brothers. You know, a lot of families don't get along, but me and my brother, we get along well together. And so being with them and all, it was a great day. And I enjoy every minute of it and cannot look on Sunday afternoon. I get looking going to work on Monday morning.
Wow, that's a pretty inspiring story, actually. You know, I hadn't even thought about this, but you know, a family business, and I work together with my family as well at EMA, so I'm familiar, and I enjoy working with them as well. But, you know, we both know of situations where that has not worked out so well. And it's really great that that you and your brothers do get along. I'm assuming you guys divided up responsibilities, because I would think if you don't do that, then there's some tension can happen if you haven't sort of divided up responsibilities.
Yeah. When the business started off, we was out at Norcross, and we started the race engine business out there. And my older brother, Warren, he started that business. And my younger brother, Frank, and myself came into it within a few months. And so I guess you would say Warren was in charge out there. But within a few years, we was able to buy another business, a parts business, a wholesale business. And Warren moved on to look after it, and I stayed at Norcross to look after that. And over the years, we have just been able to work together that even today, Warren looks after certain things, and until to be honest with you, I have pretty well started making my working with the business less and less. And I have the things that I done and looked after, and there was things that Frank done and looked after, and that kind of thing. If you don't do that, you start stepping on each other's toes, and somebody starts trying to micromanage what you are doing. So you have to give that person that you put in charge, whether he's a family member or a employee, when you put him in charge, he has to be in charge. He answers to you, but not for every little bitty thing that comes up. And we have been able to work well with that. We were a very close family coming up. We was extremely poor money-wise, but we was extremely rich family-wise. Mom made sure that we got along well together. I know you don't do that these days. You got a whooping with a stick, with a something from out of the yard. And I know that's probably not politically correct, but that's what happened in those days. And so we learned to get along with each other, even when we did not agree 100% each other. I'll be honest with you. Sometimes my wife does things I don't like, but I know better than to say too much about it. So that's pretty well the way my brothers and I get along.
That's actually very good advice. You know, I think leadership 101 is, if you're going to assign any employee or business partner or anything else a task, is no one wants someone else coming over their shoulder, micromanaging what they're doing. I heard a guy talk one time about, he called it seagull management. He said it's where you fly in, dump all over everybody, and leave. And,
yes.
and that's just not considered a good way of management. Hey, Wyman, let's talk about customers for a minute. I heard Andy Stanley say in a speech not too long ago that if you have the only hot dog stand in town, then your hot dogs don't have to be that good. But very few of us have the only hot dog stand in town. And I used to have a sign in my office that said, if we don't take care of our customers, our competition will be happy to. And you have a reputation for being very good at customer service. Well, do you think that's something that's natural with you, or is something you learned?
First thing, there are just so many customers out there. So when you get customers, you had better make sure that you hang on to them. Customers come and go probably about every 5 years. So you have to look at them and know that you're going to get some new customers probably, but you're also going to lose some customers. And so what you have to do is to look at them. And what I do, and I'd say I probably learned more about customers than I naturally knew. I first took myself and I put myself in the customer's place. What does the customer see when he walks into our place of business? And I found out that what I see and what the customer sees is totally two different things.
Boy, that is the truth, isn't it? That's true. That's true. That's even true at your own home. That's true everywhere.
That is true. Yeah. I found out this. I found out there are three type customers that you have. You got the first-time customer. This is the guy that is, and in our business, he has probably just started racing as an amateur. He comes in. He is afraid of what's going on. He is unsure. He really doesn't even know what he wants or needs. And so he is looking for assurance when he comes to us. And when he steps up to the counter, the employee, our salesman, meets him and talks to him, and we need to make sure he understands what we do and what he does, and that he can trust us, that we're not going to sell him on something he doesn't need. The other ones I found out was old-time racists is using us for the first time. And they're probably doing that because where they've been buying their parts may not have that particular part. A lot of places just carry A and B number parts. We carry every part the manufacturer has. And so when he comes to us, he is looking to see if we can deliver to him what he needs, and if we can do that. But third is your old-time customer, one that's been with you 4 or 5 years. When he calls, he wants to give you the list of parts he wants, and he trusts you, he knows it will do. So what can we do for him? We have found out that you need to be interested in him more than as a customer. We also have on our computer screen when it comes up to ask questions about his family and things. The other day, a man came in, and I was standing there waiting on some parts and everything, and I struck up a conversation with him. He's been a customer out for years, and I asked him, I said, how is your wife doing? He said, she's not doing good at all. I said, would you mind if this Wednesday morning when our prayer group meets, can we pray for her? And he says, yes. And he stood and shook my hand. He says, that is one of the reasons I come here, because you care about me more than you care about my business.
That says a great deal about you, Wyman, and about your business. Hey, Wyman, we're coming on a hard break here. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Driven to Business. Our special guest today is Wyman Barnett. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Hey, today's program, just a reminder, is carried as a podcast on eddiemayfield.com. That's E-D-D-I-E, Mayfield.com. We're also streamed live over biz1190.com, carried live every Saturday at 11 o'clock here on biz1190, W-A-F-S. We're talking with Wyman Barnett. Wyman, right before the break, you were talking to us about taking care of your returning customers, your old-time returning customers, and how that you build a personal relationship with them. You had shared about praying for them, for his wife and things like that. You know, it is business relationships is where you don't get any long-term returning customer in at least not in most businesses. If you don't have a relationship with that customer, and we had also talked earlier about the enjoyment of being in business, that's part of the enjoyment, isn't it? Is meeting people and developing these relationships.
I think some of my best friends are the friends that I have in the business world. They are usually business people, and they face the same problems I do every day. We have so much in common. I have been real sorrowful about some of them here lately that's had a lot of financial troubles. But all in all, it's the relationship between not only the owners of the company, but also the employees of the company. And it is remarkable how we can reach out to each other and share things together. It's a great feeling to be part of it.
You know, I mean, we found at our company, EMA Drives and Controls, we found that just wanting to provide good customer service wasn't good enough, because I don't think anybody ever gets up and says, I want to provide bad service. I don't think anybody ever does that. But what I found is we had to put some systems in place to ensure that we did that. And you mentioned it a moment ago that when someone comes in, that on the computer screen of the person dealing with them, some information pops up about that person that they can ask about. That's all part of having a system of customer service, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You have to have a system. You have to be able to draw customers in. And we have found out that there's several things that we have found out. One of the things that we have found out is to ask about the family and all. But there are customers that we try to get. We want them to understand that there are new products around, and we want them to be able to look and know about the new products. And the way we've gone about that, we've gone back to old school, and one thing, companies and people tell you that catalogs about your company is not the way to go anymore. But we have found out that if we produce a catalog, and we do it in two sizes, we do it on an almost monthly basis, a very small one that we do in-house, and we send that catalog out in every box that leaves our place. And but we, about once a year, once every 15, 16 months, we make a very large catalog, and we send it out. It's expensive. But what we have found out, there are people that will sit down and read that catalog and look at it and get information from it, and we'll be able to get them to come to us. And the other thing that everybody's going to, and we had to go to it too, is the Internet. That has probably been one of the highlights of getting new customers and keeping some of the old ones, especially in the wholesale business. A wholesale parts store, if he calls us, sends us an order before 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we guarantee that we'll get it out that day and to him so he can have that product the next day. It also, we've got it for the retail customer. He can get on that thing at home and look up parts and see what he wants and all. He doesn't have to necessarily buy it then. He can come back later, or we would like for him to come down to the store and see about it. But you always have to be looking for some way to get the customer to know that you are still in business and that you still want that business. And that's the way we go about doing it.
And you know, it's harder and harder, I think, with all the there's so many messages getting out today that it's very, you know, burrowing through the noise, so to speak, and getting to a prospect or a customer is a really hard job. I mean, how do you guys, you spent an entire career selling in this area. How early on, how did you find your prospects? And you already mentioned the Internet now, but is that where you get most of your new customers from these days? But early on, how did you find them?
You go where the customer goes. That is one of the things that was hardest on the family was the way you get new customers in the 60s and 70s and all before the Internet come along is we done drag race engines and drag race cars then. And so what we do every weekend, we was at the racetrack somewhere. We would divide up. We'd be at three different racetracks. We'd be handing out cars. We'd be handing out different things that we had. We'd be sponsoring races for the local thing. It was a massive job to be able to get people to know that we was in business. We could not really afford, and I don't think it really would have helped to do radio or TV ad, because remember, we are a very niche business, and so what you wanted to do was to reach the people that was actually in the business. And that was the only way that we knew and only way we could at that time afford to reach out. And it's totally different today since we're in the wholesale and retail parts business. It is a way, there's ways to do that because we have a bigger audience to sell to. But when we built race car engines and race cars, it was a very small market. So we had to go find that market, and that's the way we went about doing it for years.
Well, I mean, it's an amazing story to me that, you guys were able to grow, you and your brothers, able to grow a small motor rebuild shop, basically, into a business that has international reach. Now, you've already shared a little bit about that with the Internet. Is that what drove it international, is the Internet, or did something else happen?
Until a few years ago, a small business could not do international business. But since the banking systems has changed, where you got bank cards that's good all over the world, the Internet where you can get your message out, you can do those kind of things. For years, we couldn't do it. But since we've got them, our international business has been growing right along. I guess the way that you, if you ask me how we got the international business to grow, is through the Internet, for one thing. But over time, we have made manufacturers has helped us. A few years ago, probably back in the early 90s, with the three brothers, we come up with a great idea. Every idea we have, we think when we got it, it's a great idea. But we yeah. looked and saw that big manufacturers, the ones that make the big race car parts and all, they work big races. I'm talking about places that had 80 to 100,000 people. They brought their own people, their own equipment. But smaller races, smaller car shows, they didn't work. So we made a proposal, the 25 of them, that we would buy tractors and trailers, that me and my younger brother would go along to supervise, and we put five manufacturers on each trailer. And we worked small races. We worked car shows. We furnished the people to demonstrate the product if they didn't have somebody there. And we got to know the manufacturers real well. So they not only paid us in money, but they also paid us in something else. When people from overseas would call them to ask for a product, they could not sell them the product because they are manufacturers and they can only sell wholesale. So what they would do, they would call us and tell us to call this guy. One of the manufacturers up north even put in a line so that when you called and talked to him, he'd say, wait a minute, I'll turn you over to our sales department. And the phone rung in one of our salesman's office at work. And the customer never knew from England that he had been transferred from Michigan to Georgia. And so that really helped. And we got to being able to make contact out. Something happened last year that kind of caught us by surprise. The Australian government called and asked, would we send a representative to a meeting they was having in Australia? And we said, well, what good is it going to do? And they said, well, we want to see what y'all do, and we want you to see what we do. And the best part of all, we're going to pay for all of it. Wow. But we sent my nephew down there. He's a good salesman and all, and so he goes down. To be honest with you, they ain't paid for his daughter to go with him. But it has been good for both of us. We found out they have a company down there that's a small business that sells specialty lubricants. And so we needed some of those. And they have also found out down there, and drag racing is probably the most popular sport down there, they find out about us. And the parts business is really picked up for Australian. So that worked out. We do things like that, and some of it is just, you know, something we just happen to fall into.
You know, that's I think what you just described there is not falling into something. That's an old Zig Ziglar saying that you know, no one ever stumbles over anything sitting down. You know, you're moving along. I think the idea that you figured out a target market, you figured out where that was not being reached, and that a small company could niche into is an astonishing story. I think anyone listening in any business can think of ways that you can do that. If you're a small business and you're trying to compete with the big guys, maybe you don't compete with the big guys. Maybe you figure out where the big guys are not, and then you, as Wyman and his brothers did, you find the small races, places the big manufacturers were not working. And by doing that, did you pick up customers, you also made yourself more valuable by filling a niche that the manufacturers saw they were not doing. Wyman, you know, now you're. When I was younger, my idea of successful business people were all these handsome guys that wore suits and ties and had advanced degrees and were smarter than all the rest of us. Both of us have had pretty good success in business. So what does that tell us about that idea?
I don't want you talking about those guys with advanced degrees. They are some of our best employees. I'm not making fun of them, but they are sometimes great folks. I think my wife always wanted me to tote a briefcase and wear a tie, but I was like a lot of other people in the world. Every job is not suitable to everyone, and there are people that wear ties and tote briefcases that do wonderful work, and good for them, but that's not for me. I found out a long time ago that I was kind of a worker type, folks. I wanted to be there. I want to have hands on and pushing a pencil, sitting in an office. I would probably go crazy in 2 days.
So, I know you, and I absolutely do know and believe. Hey, Wyman, we got a break coming up on us right here. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad to have you here with us today. Our special guest today is Wyman Barnett. By the way, as a reminder, you can hear a podcast of today's program after it's over on eddiemayfield.com. And we're glad you're here. Wyman, such a that last segment, I was making a bunch of notes. I really think you could almost write a book about the stories you told me about you guys figuring out a target market, doing it. And right before the break, and I'm sorry I interrupted you, you were telling me about that your wife wanted you to carry. I know you. I can't imagine you walk around in a suit and a briefcase very often. But pick up on that.
I was saying my wife always wanted me to carry a briefcase and do that. But, you know, everybody's not cut out for the same jobs. And I was never cut out for that office-type job. But there's nothing wrong with those. There's great folks that do them and all. But you also, when you go into business, you got to sit down and look at yourself personally. I could study brain surgery for 10 years, and I will never be a brain surgeon. I know that, and I don't think that is downgrading me. It's just something that I'm not capable of doing. What you need to do is find something that you are capable of doing. And it may not be very many things, and if it's not, you need to get on those things and work on them really hard.
That goes back to that entire thing about building on your strengths and realizing what you're not so good at doing. And it doesn't mean we don't need to work on our weaknesses some, too. I've got weaknesses over the years I've tried to work on to get better at doing. But you do absolutely get the most bang for the buck on working on your strengths. Wyman, in the little bit we have left here in the program today, I wanted to talk a little bit of outside career and perhaps just and speak a little bit about leadership and just about life in general. Wyman, I've known you for a long time. How do you want to be remembered by the people that have known you and worked with you over the years?
This sounds like I'm writing an obituary for you know something.
I don't mean that.
I went to the doctor a couple of weeks ago and he said I was in good shape. I don't know. I really, if you sit down and I think about that, I want people to remember that I was honest with them, that I never tried to do anything to belittle them in any way. And that I always cared about them, not only the people, but also the employees that we have and all. With my employees, I want them to know that I never felt like I was any better or any worse than they were. And I really don't. I think the biggest thing I want to remember is that I was a good man, you might say, that I done what was right. I looked after my family. I took care of the people that I had responsibility to look after and things like that. I guess that would be it.
You know,
what writing an obituary.
No, I don't mean to do that. But, you know, what I think, the reason I like to ask that question of a successful business people is because I've never had anyone yet tell me they wanted to be remembered as the guy that got the big job or the guy that made the big bucks or the guy that had the big boat or the big house or the big anything. That really, over long term, those materialistic things don't really carry us very far. And I think it at some point, life comes down to relationships, whether it's relationships with our friends and coworkers or with our families or our relationship with God. I think in a way that wanting to be remembered as a decent, good person is really what a lot of us come down to saying. My point is I always try to tell people in business this: if you interview and talk with successful business people, you will not find very many that were motivated by materialistic means, and they were not motivated by money. And that's not to say money's not a motivation, but it doesn't carry us very far, does it?
Money in my life was way down the list. I never had money growing up, so I always thought that would be something that I would really strive for. But for years, I let money kind of rule over me, that I was anxious in building more and more and making the business grow and grow. And then I looked around one day and I said, what am I doing? I am letting my family go by. I will never be able to have these days again with them. We have enough money to live off of. And I think that we, in our business, all four of us brothers, the three of us right now, because one of them has had to retire, we had a change in our attitude towards business. It got to be, we changed and said, how big do we want to be? And we all decided that we're about as big as we want to be. We got less than 50 employees, and so we don't have some of those problems over 50 employees. And we decided that we are going to live a life that's pleasant to us. And it has made a difference in the last 20 years. We want the business to continue to do good. We would like for it to grow, and we would like for all that. But it's not the thing that we live every day for.
Well, I mean, I think one of the questions anybody that's thinking of starting a business should always ask himself is, what does success look like to me? I mean, what's going to, you know, try and visualize that. What's it look like? I think one thing that stops people from doing is perhaps getting into a business they don't want to be in. Like, for instance, I have a friend that started a restaurant up in North Georgia because she thought that would be a lot of fun. But what she found after she got in it, what that means, success means getting up at 5 o'clock every morning and being at that place all day long, every day until late at night, because the way that business model works, you can't employ that many people. And basically it means you don't get to take vacations. You don't get to go anywhere. And so I think part of being successful and having a successful life is sort of thinking those things out. You know, the other thing I was thinking about, what you were talking about with your brothers, you know, some of that, I think probably just the fact you guys getting older and getting more mature. I mean, don't you think that?
I don't argue with that at all. As you get older, you start looking at things different and all. I would tell a young person today, if they was going in business, to remember one thing. It's not all about the money. If you multiply getting up 5 days a week for the next 40 years, and that's what a young person's going to do, if you dread getting up and going to work every day, you're in the wrong business.
That's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly.
You need to have a business that when you get up in the morning, you're as excited about going. Now, you have to make enough money to make a living. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But money should not be driving you. A guy that's happy living in a $100,000 house is a lot happier than a guy living in a $500,000 house. And if money made people happy, those folks in Hollywood wouldn't be getting divorced and wouldn't be committing suicide. And so sometimes I wonder if money has anything to do with happiness.
I kind of view it like when I used to fly airplanes. We talked about airspeed's the big deal when you're flying a small plane. They tell you to check airspeed, check airspeed, check airspeed, because below a certain amount of airspeed, you crash. But in a business, money's kind of like that in a business. You don't have to worry about it as long as it's above some nominal level. But if it goes below that, you really do have to worry about it a lot. But as long as it stays above that level, it's not something you have to think about too much. I mean, you need to look at it, but think about it so much if it's above that. Hey, Wyman, I mentioned earlier that both of us are active in church, and you in particular have been very active for many, many years in teaching young people, taking them on mission trips and so forth. What has that meant in your life?
Well, it means I got to leave Saturday going to New Mexico to work with the Navajo Indians with 32 high schoolers. It means everything to me. You know, I don't know why. I just love being around those people. I think I'm really afraid to get old. And my theory is if I hang around young people, some of it's bound to rub off on me. And I have enjoyed every minute of it. I think it also may be a calling from God. I'll tell you this story. I used to be in adult Sunday school class, and I'm not going to say that I enjoyed it. But one day, the youth minister asked me to come over because AT&T was on strike and the Sunday school teacher for the ninth grade was gone on it, and he asked me to teach ninth grade. Well, my family made fun of me for the whole week. Oh, you're going to have to teach them ninth graders, and they're going to be awful. And when we got in the car, my son asked me, he said, Dad, how was the Sunday school today? And I turned and looked at him, and as serious as I know how, I said, Son, I have found my calling.
Wyman, we're going to have to end on that, and what a great ending that is. We've got a great guest. Wyman, thank you so much for being here. Folks, you've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll see you again next Saturday. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.